Hello. In this audio snippet, we'd like to continue talking about music and the day that music went nowhere, which is the day we're living in right now. But before we do that, we'd like to go through some headlines and share some thoughts from those headlines. And we hope that somehow it will become evident in some sort of way how these headlines, which seem unrelated, are in truth related to everything we've been talking about, including the state of music and the state of America at this time. So the first story that we'd like to go to was posted on the New York Post. So I'm going to go to it here. It was posted on the 3rd of December of 2023, which is a little less than a week ago. And the headline says, USS Kearney, several commercial ships attacked in the Red Sea, Pentagon, according to the Pentagon. So I'm just going to go very quickly through it. It's not worth going through all the details, I dare say, but it says basically a U.S. warship and three commercial vessels were attacked in the Red Sea off Yemen on Sunday, an intense development that American officials said appeared to be fully enabled by Iran. And then it says the United States will consider all appropriate responses in full coordination with its international allies and partners, unquote. The U.S. Central Command warned in a statement of the incident, which ratcheted up maritime tensions in the Middle East during the Israel-Hamas war. The USS Kearney, which previously shot down missiles and drones aiming for it as it escorted a commercial vessel through the war-torn region, was targeted along with at least three commercial ships, starting around 10 a.m. local time in an assault that lasted about 5 hours. 5 hours! The Pentagon and an unnamed U.S. official said, according to the press. The three commercial vessels were struck by the missiles, but it did not appear that the American warship was hit. So the reason why we want to share this very quickly is just to emphasize what we were saying before about this story that we read from The Guardian, from this person named Tom. I think his name was Tom Stevenson. I'm not quite sure. But he was talking about how the decline of America was more people talking than reality. But this is an example of the fact that he's wrong. To say something like that is to cover your eyes with your hands and pretend like you're not seeing what you're seeing. If America, America's days were not over, you would not see an incident like this, where American ships are attacked, and including a U.S. warship, not just a commercial private ship, but a U.S. warship being deliberately attacked. And in full view of the world, that would not be happening if America were not dead. If the preeminence of American power had not ended, and as we've shared before, it ended on September the 6th of 2023. That's when we officially became a third world country. So we lost all respect. That aura of protection that was over us is gone. And you remember when we were attacked in America on 9/11, it was so shocking to us. It was so shocking to the nation that it led to an assault on two evil regimes way out in on the other side of the world, in Iraq and Afghanistan, and there were heavy consequences because of what was done on 9/11. So when you poke the bear, when you poke the giant, you are going to see consequences. but we're not a giant anymore. We're not a fearsome force. The veil has been removed, just as it was removed from Israel. It has been removed from America. And because the veil of protection is gone, now the enemy is just infiltrating and attacking. That's why we have the open borders with the millions, literally, of immigrants just flooding in, like it's like they're just going through their own backyard. And now we have this sort of international situation. And there is no fear. There is no sense of retaliation. There is no. Everybody knows that nothing's going to come of this. All you hear is words, words, words. These Pentagon people just talking as if they are offended by the situation. But there is no real outrage, because the veil of protection has been removed from this country, just as it has been removed from Israel. Because we are not a power anymore, a real power. I'm just going to quickly read another headline here from the Gateway Pundit .com. It's a similar story, if I remember correctly. The headline says, "America under fire, U.S. warship and several commercial ships attacked in the Red Sea. Iran-backed Houthi rebels claim responsibility for attacking two ships." December 3rd, 2023, that's when this story was posted. And I think it's a similar story about the same incident. But I wanted to just mention this just because of the headline, you know, "America under fire." And this is on a conservative website where we quote from very frequently. And it just says down here at the bottom, at the end of the story, "The Trump administration recognized the Yemeni rebels as a terrorist group, but Bite Me decided to remove the militants from the list in 2021. So these rebels who are taking credit for having done this. So that's how weak we are now, that these rebels have no problem in saying, "Hey, I was the one. You want to know who did it? I did it." You know, raising their hands, you know, proudly. And this terrorist group was recognized as a terrorist group by Trump when he was in the White House. But now Bite Me has... in 2021, the first year he was, soiling the White House, he decided to remove the group from the terror list. And that's, again, the veil of protection being removed from the land. And the thing is that, conservatives look at this and they complain and justifiably so, but the problem is they don't try to put two and two together and try to understand that there's something that has happened to the country, and it's gone, and it's beyond repair. And at the end of the day, as we constantly say, it's because of conservatism. Conservatism prevented the manifestation of what had to happen in this country so that it could be restored. And these are the consequences. I wanted to also read a little bit of this story. This is from a more technical computer geeky website. I received some newsletters from them. I barely read them. They are very technical and so forth, but I keep receiving them just to feel like I am in the know of what's going on in the computer world, even though maybe I'm not as much as I should be. But this article was posted on the website is called, the domain is techrepublic.com. TECHrepublic.com. And the headlines says, new DDoS attacks on Israel's enterprises infrastructure should be a wake-up call. Now, interestingly, this story was posted on April 18th, 2023. And I came upon this link as I was cleaning up my inbox and going through some of the unread emails. And that's one of the emails from Tech Republic, a link to this article. So this was on April 18th, 2023. That was that would be less than 6 months from the attack of October 7th, 2023. So the veil had all, as we've said, Israel's veil was removed on May 14th, 2018, after 70 years of having been reborn as the nation of Israel. The truth removed the veil from Israel because Israel kept thinking that they were, that they had achieved their nationhood and had been able to preserve it because of their righteousness, and not out of mercy. And instead of turning to the truth and saying, okay, now that we've been given an opportunity, I want to understand the full truth. Instead of doing that, they became arrogant, even more arrogant, thinking that they had that they knew all that they needed to know, and that they could stand on their own righteousness, kind of like conservatism in America. And that's why the veil was removed after 70 years. So this is a story from April 18th, and it says here, experts see the latest DDoS attacks. DDoS means it refers to when an intruder is trying to take down a website by sending thousands and thousands of requests at the same time to kind of bombard the website with requests and shut it down. You know, it's like somebody calling a restaurant and ordering all this food without, you know, paying for it, just calling, ordering, taking up time and not ordering, but they keep the phone line busy, and then they shut down the business because the business can't take in orders, that sort of thing. So it says here, experts see the latest DDoS attacks against Israel as a case study in the effectiveness of simple brute force cybersecurity attacks, even against the most sophisticated targets. In recent days, Israel has faced cyber attacks reportedly involving Iran. Experts say the attacks demonstrate the risk that fairly unsophisticated attacks pose even to well-defended enterprises, and that other countries should take notice and prepare. Started before the annual Op Israel Hacktivist assault on Israel, enterprises from April 6th to April 9th, Israel experienced recent attacks by Russian entities like Killnet and Anonymous Sudan, a cybersecurity bugbear for Israel this year. The group, aligned with Killnet, carried out exploits in Denmark and Sweden early in 2023 and briefly shuttered the website of Israel's largest security company, Checkpoint. And then it says here later, the DDoS attacks... I'm going to read this paragraph I had skipped. The threat group is a key player in the new wave of attacks timed with the Al-Quds Day, Iran's Day of Commemoration for Palestine. Then it says the DDoS attacks hit Israel's bank, critical infrastructure, including passport control and processing, the postal service, several telecom companies, as well as smart home and building systems. Among financial sector's targets were Bank Ben Leumi, Discount Bank, and then mentioned some other banks. The point of this is this story was posted 6 months before the 5.5 or 6 months before the attack of October 7th. So the signs were there that the veil had been removed. And that Israel was not as safe and solid and in control as she thought she was. These were warnings, but they were ignored because Israel just said, "Oh, you know, who's gonna come against us? We're that good." Another story we wanted to read very quickly here is from the Gateway Pundit, and it was posted on December 7th, 2023, and the headline says, "You're not alone." In quotes, and then it says, "Christians United for Israel raises $3 million and counting." So there's an organization called Christians United for Israel. So it has, you know, this "You Are Not Alone" campaign. It says here that they launched that campaign in New York, Alabama, Florida, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, North Carolina, Ohio, Tennessee, and Texas to support Israel in its fight against the Hamas terrorist death cult and campus-bred anti-Jewish bigotry. So, the reason why we're mentioning this is, again, the sad naivete of Christians. We've explained before how Jews and the Israelis have used Christians as a way to get things that they need, but without embracing anything that Christians have to offer in terms of thinking. So if they were consistent with their own thinking, then Jews, especially the more religious ones, should condemn Christianity, because Christianity is, according to them, a faith that came from following a guy who claimed to be the Messiah when he really wasn't. But instead of being consistent in their thinking, they just use Christians as a way to get things. They take advantage of the Christians. And then they walk away, and then the Christian said, "Hey, wait a second. I also wanted to tell you how much Jesus loves you." And the Jew goes, "Oh, whatever. Come back when you have more money to give me, or more provisions, or more support, military support, and so forth." And after 70 years, the truth said, "Enough of this." That's why the veil was removed, and Christians, especially in America, are still moronically unaware of anything. They're just still living in the same black and white paradigm. As Mike Johnson said, it's black and white. You know, those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who curse Israel will be cursed. He doesn't even understand what he's saying. He's quoting things from the Bible that he doesn't understand. And because of this black and white thinking and not understanding, there is a more that there are hues of colors, there are different varieties and shades that he has that we have to discern. Because of that, Christians are just following the same thing. Oh yeah, the traditional thinking is, as a Christian, I have to support Israel. And Israel, everything about Israel is good, and any enemy of Israel is an enemy of mine, and any friend of Israel is a friend of mine. And with this very simplistic thinking, instead of confronting Israel and saying, "Hey, you know, make up your mind. Are you with us or are you against us? What do you think? Do you believe in this Yeshua? Is he the Mashiach, or is he not the Mashiach? But if he's not the Mashiach, then just walk away from us and stop asking and expecting our support." But these people are still flocking to them and saying, hey, we support you. So again, it's that naivete, the unawareness that the truth has declared, the veil has been removed. They still keep thinking the same way. And by the same token, they still keep thinking these same Christians who are supporting Israel and raising money for them are at the same time still convinced that America's veil has not been removed, that its a position of preeminence in the world stage has not been permanently removed, never to be given back. They're not aware of it. So they're living in this fantasy world of the past. And it's so naive. You know, it's like giving money to someone who hates your guts, and who couldn't care less about what you believe and what you stand for, and not being aware that the circumstances have changed. Because I'm not against having done that in the past, but there was a what I call an enough point. There was a point when you had to say enough, and that point happened. The truth declared it on May 14th, 2018. And after that, things changed. But we're still not aware of it, apparently, in America. So, and then the other story we wanted to go to mention very quickly is on the gatewaypundit.com again, posted on December 8th, the day 2023, the day before this recording. And the headline says, it's sort of funny to read and sad to read at the same time, but it says, DC taco stand owner says he spends $4,000 a week on private security due to crime crisis. So it's a DC taco stand, in Washington, DC. And it's spending $4,000 a week on private security because of all the crime. And that's part of, you know, what we have said before, that's the difference between the third world and the first world. One of the reasons why the third world is poor is because their moral fiber is so low. Their moral character is so low. There's so much corruption. There's so much stealing and taking advantage of each other at the slightest opportunity. There's so much of that. The society has to start channeling resources away from productive activities just to protect itself from that internal corruption. In America, we didn't have that before, but we have that now because we are now a third world country. In third world countries, they have to spend all this money on security and all these other things, and they have to limit commercial transactions. Everything is done with more paranoia, with much more caution, because you can't trust the other person. Because everybody's just looking at the slightest opportunity to take advantage of you, because these are societies of theft and corruption. There's a moral decay underneath it, and white liberals don't understand that because they don't understand right and wrong. They don't process reality from that perspective. That's why they are also twisted. So they think that the third world is poor because there's some sort of imaginary windmill oppressing them, and they put on their Don Quixote gear and call Sancho over, and they go and fight the windmills. But they don't realize that the reason why these countries are poor is because of there are underlying issues in the culture, cultural values that are destructive. And that's what leads to the poverty. And one of the consequences of that corruption in the cultural values and the values of those cultures is that you have to spend resources on things that you shouldn't have to be spending on. And it paralyzes economic activity. It creates all this extra bureaucratic layer that you have to go through because the society is so culturally corrupt. And that's what we have in America now. So America's a third world country, and the veil of protection has been removed. There used to be this veil of protection over businesses, over economic activities, where there was a relative, obviously there's always been people taking advantage of each other, even here in America and in Europe and all sorts of places. But it wasn't at this level, of this just fundamental level. Like now the shoplifting that's going on in America is just over the top. It's ridiculous. You know, in third world countries, if you go to a supermarket, if you carry a backpack into a supermarket, you have to leave the backpack at the entrance, and you're given like maybe some sort of number, and they store your backpack in some little shelf, and the shelf has a number, and they give you the number, and then when you, after you finish your shopping at the supermarket, then you stop by the place and give them the number, and they give you your backpack or bags or whatever, and then you leave. And why is that? Because they don't trust you going into the place with the backpack, because they know, you know, third world country, the backpack's going to come out with more stuff, you know, than it came in with, unpaid for stuff. And I was just thinking of that the other day, because I went to the supermarket, and I usually don't take my backpack with me. But that day, for reasons too long to explain, I had my backpack on, and I didn't want to come back home and then go back to the supermarket. I said, let me just do this whole thing in one fell swoop. So I stopped by the supermarket, went in with my backpack, and I said to myself, if I was in a third world country, I'd have to check my backpack in at the door with some guy who will keep it there. And then even in the back of my mind, I know that if I was in a third world country, I'd be thinking, I hope the guy who took my backpack is not going to take something from it. You know, that's the environment that the third world lives in. So I went in and did my shopping and left. But I was thinking about that. So that's the sort of things that that we used not to have to think about, but now we do. And in the past, there was this protection over businesses, over transactions, that yes, there's going to be shoplifting, but there's going to be a certain level of trust that we can have, we can function without having to worry so much about someone taking advantage of us. But now that veil of protection is gone, and now businesses have to kind of replace the veil with something, and it's at a price. So that's where we are. So as you can, as I'm sure you've noticed, these five stories that we looked at just now are all about the veil being removed from America, from Israel. Interestingly, that's one that when we were, right before we began to talk about the state of music and things like that, one of the things we talked about is the veil being removed. So it's like we're going back. And then the second thing we said right before the music series, you could say, is what we're going to talk about right now. It's like we're revisiting these last two things that we talked about right before we started talking about music. And let's go to the next story here. Again, it's from thegatewaypundit.com, posted on December 2nd, 2023. And it says, Bite Me's DOJ, Department of Justice, and I say that in quotes, fines Tennessee Christian Trucking Company $700,000 for requiring workers to disclose legal status. And I'm not going to read the details of the story, but it is so sad to read a headline like that, where the government is punishing you because you want to make sure that you are not breaking or enabling the breaking of the country's laws. And this is not from a state government. This is from the federal government. And supposedly the federal government is the one that has jurisdiction over immigration issues. So they're the ones who should be the most concerned about immigration laws. So there are two outrageous things here. First of all, that the Department of Justice is fining this Christian trucking company for asking workers to confirm their legal working status in the country. That's one thing. But the second thing is the amount of money, $700,000. I mean, where do they come up with these numbers? And we've said this before, that in the American legal system, it's gotten out of control, and it's been like that for decades and decades. No one has really said anything about it. No one has said, okay, let's figure this out. Let's look at this from a metaphysical perspective and try to figure out what how to do this right. And it's the issue of all these lawsuits where people are awarded millions and millions of dollars. You have a slip and fall situation, and then the lawyer sues, and the person gets $400,000. And some people, like for example, with Alex Jones, the conservative reporter or newscaster, I'm not sure how to call him. He said something about the Sandy Hook shooting. And then he was sued, and now he's supposed to pay, I forget the number, but maybe I'm exaggerating. I remember it was like near $1 billion. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but I'm not sure if it's, I think it's kind of around that number. It's an outrageous number, because he said something that hurt some liberal parents' feelings. And you go, how can you measure the hurting of feelings, and how can you put a number in the millions to it? So we've tolerated this system where people just pull these numbers out of their buttocks, and they go to the bathroom, pull out a number, and they come out with the number, the turd in their hands, and say, this is the amount that you have to pay. Where's the justification? And we have never clarified that in our legal system. And why haven't we clarified that? Because lawyers were the ones who, at the end of the day, are making the laws. Because all these Congress people, there, a lot of them are lawyers who've turned politician. They don't want the golden goose to stop laying the golden eggs. The legal system in America is fed by money. And lawyers are always trying to sue because get a lot of money because, they get a 20, 30 or 40% cut of that. So we have this profession in America that profits off of laws, and there's something fundamentally wrong with that. And we've talked about that before in some of the very early audio snippets, that one of the things that would have been changed in the new American Constitution would have been that the lawyer profession would have become this very, I would call it monastic profession, where people would just go in and have a base salary, that'd be it. And if they don't want that, then they should choose another profession, because you can't have a group of people who use the law to make money. There's something fundamentally just flawed just saying that. There's something, you say it with your mouth and you go, there's something wrong with what I just said. A group of people making money off of the law, the legal system. So then they use the legal system to make money. So that's how the legal system gets corrupt. And then we have juries that go in with bitterness and resentment against companies and against certain people, like what happened with Alex Jones, like what happens with so many lawsuits against big companies. They come with this communistic thinking that we have to get something back from the evil big corporation. And they come up with these billions and millions of dollars of money that they impose as penalties. And who comes up with these numbers, and why isn't there an objective evaluation to know exactly, how can you get this number? There has to be a metaphysical system that should be in place to come up with the number, if there is a number to come up with. And we focus on getting money from people instead of punishing the crime. If there was a violation of a right, then somebody should be in jail. But lawyers are more concerned about getting money because that, you know, that's how they become wealthy. So there's something fundamentally wrong. So $700,000. But now the $700,000, this is not from a lawsuit. This is the Department of Justice deciding to find them. Where did that number come from? See, and so we have an executive branch that's out of control that is doing its own legislation. And we've never really addressed that. Conservatives every now and then complain about that, but no one ever really does anything about it. No one says, oh, there's a problem. We have this because the Constitution was never clear about what the executive branch can or cannot do. And conservatives would go, oh, no, it's very clear. It's just that we have overreached. No. The fact is, because it was so ambiguous, we had to expand what the executive branch could do to make it workable. That's why it had to be expanded. But because there were no boundaries, then they started expanding like a cancer into all sorts of areas. But it's because there was never a clear definition of what the branch should be. If we just went by what's in the Constitution, then we wouldn't be a country. We couldn't function with an executive branch that is so limited in its understanding of or scope or anything. But the thing is that we have to fix the Constitution. We have to stop this delegation of legislation that the legislative branch has been doing for decades and decades of saying, okay, we allow a certain agency in the executive branch to come up with regulations, and they come up with all these regulations on their own, and they're never approved by the Congress. And we explained in previous audio snippets that that's one of the things that would have changed, that no legislation can come through the executive branch. They all have to go through the legislative branch. The agencies could offer and submit bills to be voted on in Congress. They are the Department of Energy, and they feel that there's a need to pass a law to because they have noticed certain things that maybe the Congress hasn't noticed because they're thinking about something else. They are the Department of Energy, so they're always thinking about energy, and they notice that there's some bill that needs something that needs to be changed because that will affect our energy capabilities in the future or whatever. So they can propose a bill to Congress and say, hey, we need this passed, but the Congress is the one that should be voting on it, not them coming up with these regulations. So, and what I find so ironic here is that in recent stories, the Gateway Pundit has been complaining, and rightfully so, that in Congress, they have banned their website. So if on the network in Congress, that Congress people access their internet and Wi-Fi or whatever has blocked the Gateway Pundit, which is ridiculous, So they're trying to get it reinstated and so forth. And Matt Gaetz, one of the leading Republican people, young people, said that he is fighting to get the Gateway Pundit reinstated, and he needs to he was investigating why it was blocked to begin with. But the thing is that well, if he's so concerned about having the Gateway Pundit unblocked, then I'm pretty sure that he's still reading it at home, or at least on his personal phone or whatever. And I'm sure he ran across this story, and a lot of the Republicans or conservatives in Congress who will follow the Gateway Pundit must have read this story. And no one goes, okay, we need to stop this nonsense. No one is outraged. No one's saying, okay, we're here in Congress. We can do something about it. We can pass a bill. We can start defining these things, and passing transcendental legislation that will define the course of our legislative history, for years to come. But no, they just, pardon my French, they just bitch and moan. That's all they do. They get outraged when they see this, and what they say is the solution is, oh, we need a new president. We need a new person in the White House. That's their solution. Just change the people instead of saying, let's change the system. It's, again, this unwillingness to deal with the roots. And it's and that deal unwillingness to deal with the roots is what happens a lot when you're stuck in black. We've talked about the stages of growth of an individual. You have white, red, black, and green. White is when you have this epiphany, this moment of awareness of something new, a new truth, a new revelation, a new understanding. And then the red stage is when you are when you take this epiphany and you start getting into conflict with the people in the current system. You become like a salmon, you know, swimming against the current. So you become this source of conflict, this source of red conflict, as you are trying to convince other people about this epiphany that you had. And then the black stage is when there's a certain separation between you and those who want to remain stuck in the old system, and you go into this kind of a loneliness, kind of separation and wilderness period. And then the green stage is when you say, okay, I'm going to make the ultimate sacrifice to make sure that there's going to be a permanent transformation. So this epiphany that I have in my head and my heart is going to be fulfilled. And then you become a radical. When you go into the green stage, you go into a radical stage where you're willing to sacrifice yourself, your life, if needed, to achieve that. And then you start, when you enter into the green stage, you start entering into what I would call a fractal stage, where you start seeing things in a complexity and a dimension that you had not seen before. And things you say sound strange and very weird to the people who are not in that stage with you. But these are deeper, more transformational things, because you've crossed that line into the green zone. And when you're in the green zone, you start seeing things in a more complex and deeper levels. And you start seeing things that sound crazy to people, but they're crazy true. They're so fundamentally transformational. That's why they sound so confusing to people, but they are a higher level of truth. And if those truths are implemented or adopted, then they are transformational. They would transform society. They would transform everything. So you go into that green stage, and America just got stuck in black. And to go from black to green, you have to cross the River Jordan, figuratively speaking. You have to cross that river. But it requires saying, okay, once I go into the green zone, that's it. Like, there's no turning back. I'm going to go crazy. You know, I'm going to go fractal crazy. I'm going to become radical. I'm going beyond the point of no return. It's like crossing the Rubicon, and it means embracing certain things that that defy everything you've believed in your whole life, and it's not just a matter of believing something just because you want to be contrarian or radical. It's because you're believing truth. It's just that this truth is very transformational or revolutionary or whatever you want to call it. So a lot of people don't want to cross that Jordan because it means giving up some stuff. And you know that when you cross into the green zone, you're going to die, figuratively or sometimes, unfortunately, literally. There is a death that happens in the green zone. And America just didn't want to go into the green. It got stuck in black. And when you get stuck in black, you only start dealing with surface things, and you never get to the root of issues. And we talked about that. That was the other topic that we discussed right before we started talking about music. One was the veil being removed, and the second thing was the black and willingness. And by black, I mean the black stage. The black unwillingness to deal with the roots of things. So we just see all these surface things and complain, but no one says, how do we deal with the root issues? And another story that emphasizes that, we'll look at it very quickly. It says, this is posted on FloridaPhoenix.com. Must be like a newspaper or something. It's a website with news. And it says, Dem presidential candidates left off the Florida ballot are digging in. Party standing by the process. So apparently, it says here, as of Friday, three Democratic presidential candidates are stuck and unable to get on the March primary ballot in Florida, and they say it's suppressing democracy. At issue is that the Florida Democratic Party has submitted only Joe Bitemy's name on the March 2024 presidential primary ballot. Bitemy is dominating the Democratic race for president, quote-unquote, with an average lead of approximately 60 points over any other contender in the presidential race, according to Real Clear Politics. So, and this story was posted on December 1st, 2023. But so basically, it's this situation where even in the Democrat Party, they are suppressing each other. And who cares about Democrat candidates, but or any candidates, any American candidates nowadays. But the point of this is, how can this be happening? We have a party system that is corrupt. And I got a link to this story from a conservative website. So the conservatives read this and they go, look, you know, look at how corrupt the Democrats are. And that's all they get from it. But they don't get, well, how can we have a party system like that, where the party people can control who rises, who doesn't rise, and they can just shut people out like this so blatantly. And we went through this in many of the original audio snippets, the ones at the beginning, where we talked about we were supposed to change the party system. And that's one of the reasons why we had to have ranked choice voting. We had to get away from the two-party system. And to do that, we had to enable a system where candidates could just sign up freely without having to kiss the buttocks of some party leader. But that creates a problem that you have so many candidates. How do you choose from them? Then that's where the ranked choice voting comes in. The conservatives are also so much against, because they don't go to the, see, when you go green, that's when you start seeing these things that, oh, we have to change the party system. That means we have to enable these things to make it to make a partyless system functional. And one of the things that's needed for that is ranked choice voting, so that you can have all these candidates that can sign up, and you can have 10 candidates, and you can do this ranked choice voting so that you can have a winner without having this fractured voting where two candidates were similar, for example, split the votes between them and allow a weaker candidate to win because they split the vote between them, and so forth. So none of these stories prompt conservatives to think there's something fundamentally wrong with the party system. They complain about the Republican Party being a party of rhinos and this and that and the other, but they never go, okay, well, the Republican Party is the one who kind of propels their own candidates to win their primaries. And then when you're stuck in the general election, you have to choose between a rhino and a left-wing nut job from the Democrat Party. So because the party system that we have just offers these two options, then most people go, let's vote for the rhino. And then you have Mitch McCaca and Kevin McCarthy, being in Congress and running things, and we complain and all that, but we don't go, well, why do we have a system that allows party people to force us to have these two options? That's why we said before that one of the things that would have changed if America had been restored would have been that we would have had the choice to go vote and say we don't want any of the candidates. If more and like a null vote, and if more than let's say 30% of the votes were null votes, then that would mean that the election would be nullified, and the new candidates would have to be submitted, as if to say, you know, we're not going to just vote for the lesser of two evils. We want the guy we want. So if this is all you have, then bring us something else. So things like that. That's what you think about when you go into green territory. But America got stuck in black. So we just look at these things and complain. No one says there's something fundamentally wrong with the system that the founding fathers left behind. Because the party system started with the founding fathers. It's not officially in the Constitution, but it was Madison and Hamilton and these people who started the party system that we have now. And yes, obviously they're not responsible for all the corruption that happened afterwards, but they left a system that's based on parties and on two parties. We had the two-party system from the very beginning, from the foundation of the country. And it's not the ideal way to have democracy or a functioning republic, and it's caught up with us. But okay, so the next story I wanted to share on is from AmericaFirstReport.com or NOQReport.com, which then redirects you to AmericaFirstReport.com. And this story was posted on December 5th, 2023, and it says, "We're starting to find out what is beneath the thin veneer of civilization that we have all been taking for granted." It's by this fellow called Michael Snyder, who's like this conservative Christian. And he starts talking about all the things that are wrong with the country and so forth. So, and he talks, for example, "Once upon a time, Los Angeles was such a beautiful city, but now it's covered from one end to the other in filth, trash, and drug paraphernalia," and so forth. And so he goes on and on and on about it. And so he says the thin veneer, and it's very interesting how he phrased it. So he's kind of like close to the truth, but not quite getting there. You know, he says, "What's behind the thin veneer of civilization that we have all been taking for granted?" So, and we've, if you've been watching some of the videos and listen to these audio snippets, the videos that are posted, the links that are shown on the website where these recordings are posted, you will know that we've been talking about that thing, the same concept, maybe not in these words, but it's the same idea that, see, everything looks good on the surface, but once you peel the surface away, there's an emptiness. There is a what I call Sheol, that's the Hebrew word for hell. There's this dark emptiness that just overwhelms you when you peel off the veneers, he's calling it, this surface, where everything seems to be okay, and you see the emptiness of it all, the whole system. And so he's kind of grasping that, and it's like he's being forced to be aware of it, but his understanding just doesn't go far enough to see, well, there's something wrong with us conservatives, that we have enabled this. He just sees it as the liberals just running amok. So he's not getting to the root of the issue. He doesn't understand the root of the problem is conservatism. Liberalism is a consequence. Conservatism is the root of the problem. And it seems unfair, you could say, to blame conservatism. They're not the ones, you know, officially destroying the country, but they are destroying the country by their stubbornness, by their unwillingness to change, because by their willingness to change, they have enabled the enemy to do what he's doing. And so it's kind of a sad read when you when I read this, because it's like he doesn't realize it. It says here at the very end, "We are literally committing national suicide, and the stage is set for an epic eruption of societal unrest in our major cities, which will be so bad that it shocked the entire that it shake it will shake the entire planet. Decades of incredibly bad decisions have brought us to this point, but even at this late hour, our leaders continue to make some of the stupidest decisions imaginable." But see, he's always seeing it as outside, something from the outside, but it's he doesn't see that there's something on inside of him that's contributing to this. And not just contributing, that's the root of it. It's right there, but he just doesn't see it. He just sees people making bad decisions on the outside. And he's saying, "We're literally committing national suicide." Yeah, we committed national suicide. We died on, as a nation on September the 6th, 2023. And then we became brain dead on September the 8th, 2023. And we became totally dead, devoid of all our callings and our potential on September the 18th, 2023. We already committed suicide. And why? And who committed the suicide? Conservatives. Conservatives were the ones who had the option to lead to plug in the recovery respirator and to bring us back to life. And they said, "No, we're not going to do it, because if we plug this in, we have to admit the founding fathers were not all that the Constitution was not all that. That we were not this glorious Christian nation that we've always been saying we were. I can't go for that. No can do." And they didn't plug it in, and the patient died. So it was suicide by inaction. And he's complaining about all the actions that are being done. He doesn't understand there wasn't a very big inaction that we did. That's what led to our national suicide. But he doesn't see it because he's not getting to the root of things. And there's another link we want to go to, and we want to get to the music eventually, but let's try to do this very quickly. It says here, on the greatwaypundit.com, again, it's from December the 8th, 2023. That's when it was posted, so the day before this recording. It says, "Conservative commentator digs up clip that shows what person of the year Taylor Swift thinks about Bible-believing Christians." So it says, "Music superstar Taylor Swift deserves pity, but she also deserves love, for she's nothing more than a pitiable sinner like the rest of us." You read that first paragraph and you go, "Oh my goodness, this is going to be a waste of time." There's so much. I mean, speaking of pity, I mean, I pity someone who writes like that. So Taylor Swift deserves pity, but she also deserves love, for she's nothing more than a pitiable sinner like the rest of us. So I understand the need for pity. I understand the need for showing love. But see, this is so black and white, and so naive, and so simplistic. No, there's no nuance in it. There are some people you don't show pity to. You don't show love to certain people. You don't just say everybody's a pitiable sinner, like we are all pitiable sinners. That is so pathetic and simplistic and so naive. That's why they have these people have no power to change the world, because they are matriarchal. They are soulish. They're matriarchal in their understanding of things. This maternal, effeminate attitude. There's no masculinity in it. There's no saying, "Okay, we have an enemy here. This enemy's bent on destroying us. Let us go and destroy them." Well, I'm not saying that this is the attitude we should have towards Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is kind of a very complicated thing. But what I'm saying is, this person is not saying this because of Taylor Swift. That's how he thinks in general. So there is no power in him. It's all about, "Oh, let's just love one another and understand one another and show pity and compassion." that's effeminate. That is so matriarchal. There's no masculine power to that. That's why we are where we are. But let's read here very quickly. So it says, on Wednesday, Time magazine announced that it had named Swift 2023's Person of the Year. Also on Wednesday, conservative commentator John Root, and that's very interesting, John Root, R-O-O-T, and he spells his name without an H, J-O-N, John Root, posted a 12-second clip from the music video for Swift's song You Need to Calm Down, which depicted two men kissing in what appeared to be a marriage ceremony, followed seconds later by a close-up of five stereotypical hillbillies. One wore a cowboy hat, another wore a tank top with an American flag, angrily looking on in protest. Swift used those, quote, hillbillies, of course, as stand-ins for anyone who holds the Christian view of marriage. Now, I try to watch the video. It's hideous. It's unbearable, so I had to kind of, like, skip through it. But I can say that she never said anything, maybe I missed it, explicitly about Christians. But interesting how he says, you know, this, that this is an attack on Christians. So he says, so it's being seen as this perspective of, oh, he's attacking our community. See, the matriarchal mindset operates like that. He's attacking our community and our traditional values. That, you know, matriarchal thinking is very focused on the server and organizer personalities. The organizer personality is the one that focuses on traditions and finds traditions to be more important than the truth. So it's this perspective, this matriarchal perspective. I'm not saying that what he's saying about marriage is right or wrong. I'm saying it's being said from the wrong angle. I hope you see what I'm trying to say. It's trying to defend something from a matriarchal perspective and seeing things from a matriarchal point of view. Even if you're right, technically right about what you're saying, you're not going to get anywhere with a matriarchal understanding. You're not going to succeed. You're going to be defeated. You're going to be pummeled. It says here, the song's lyrics made that clear. Why are you mad when you could be glad? And it says G-L-A-A-D. And I guess that's a reference to some crazy organization, I think. Then it says Sunshine. The acronym must be the acronym of some... I think I've seen it before. G-L-A-A-D. Must be some organization out there, a crazy liberal organization. So it says here, sunshine on the street at the parade, but you would rather be in the dark ages. That's what Taylor Swift sings in the song. So John Root posts this video on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. And he says, here's a quick reminder of what Taylor Swift thinks about Christians. And then the video. But that's not, see, she's not, in her mind, she's not attacking Christians. She's attacking those who don't condone homosexual behavior. And then the full video for You Need to Calm Down amplified the anti-Christian and pride, quote unquote, themes. In fact, the video concluded with that precise message. So it does end, the video ends with these words on the screen, you could say, that says, let's show our pride by demanding that on a national level, our laws truly treat all of our citizens equally. So it goes on and on. But interesting. One thing I wanted to share here, it's very interesting. It says, he talks about how people justify her becoming the person of the year. The Time magazine Person of the Year. So it says here, for instance, in a lengthy article explaining the choice of Swift, Time's Sam Lansky, the article's author, employed telling language. Swift's impact, we're told, is, quote, without a contemporary precedent, unquote. Quote, she deploys the most efficient medium of the day, the pop song, to tell her story, unquote, Lansky wrote. Quote, yet over time, she has harnessed the power of the media, both traditional and new, to create something wholly unique, a narrative world in which her music is just one piece in an interactive, shape-shifting story. Swift is that story's architect and hero, protagonist and narrator. She has become her own story's, quote, architect and hero, unquote, in a way that lacks, quote, contemporary precedent, unquote. So why do fans flock to her shows? Well, if you travel to a city in which Swift held a concert, you, quote, made a pilgrimage. In fact, Lansky recalled attending one such concert in Santa Clara, California, quote, in a stadium with nearly 70,000 other people having a religious experience, unquote. And to what end are these pilgrimages and religious experiences? Quote, she's modeling radical self-acceptance on the world's largest stage, giving the audience a space to revisit their own joy or pain once dismissed or forgotten, unquote, Lansky wrote. To an untutored listener but careful reader, this sounds a good deal like worship of self. And the bulk of Lansky's article focused on precisely that, her story, her feelings, her, you know, whatever. And it's interesting when I read this, because this is exactly what we've been saying in all these recent audio snippets about Taylor Swift. It's exactly the same thing. See, when you get into her song, you don't come out, because it's all about her. And he says it, you know, it's... Swift is the story. She's the architect. She's the hero. She's the protagonist and the narrator. And then it's all about self. You don't come out of yourself. You can read the story if you want to. It's on thegatewaypundit.com, as we said. And the title of it, if you want to look it up, it says, conservative commentator digs up clip that shows what person of the year Taylor Swift thinks about Bible-believing Christians. But if you read this, you go, well, yes, this is exactly what we've been saying. That's why her music is so stuck in black. She is representing what happens to people who get stuck in black. It's people stuck in the wilderness, in the black wilderness, who never come out of themselves. And that's why they never cross the Jordan to make a sacrifice for others. They don't understand that. So they're trapped in their own self. That's why her music is so relevant. And I'm gonna say, on Thursday, the day I went with my backpack into the supermarket, and I had the day off, and I went to a coffee place, and I sat down, and they had the music blaring, and a lot of modern music, and some of it was okay, but most of it, the ones that were okay were like from the 2010s, that I could kind of gauge that they were from the 2010s or early 2000s. But then they started playing more modern, recent music. And then one song from Taylor Swift came on. And I know it's Taylor Swift because I kind of recognized the voice. And it was okay, but I found it interesting that I started liking it a little bit. But you know why I started liking it? Because it was so much, it was by comparison to the other rubbish that I've been listening to, it sounded good. You know, it's like good by comparison. And I said, oh, that makes sense. That's why so many people flocked to her. Because the other music was more trashy, was more, I don't know how to explain it. There was something more vulgar, not just the lyrics, it's just the musical style. It was a vulgarity to it, just a general vulgarity. And I'm not talking just about the lyrics. It was just, there's something about it. I'm not sure how to explain it. And then you hear her and it sounds more kind of like clean. There's a, like more PG, you know, instead of R-rated. I don't know how to explain it. There was something more like clean about it. And you go, oh, and a little better quality. And you go, oh, I like that. So I go, yeah, especially all the young people who have not been exposed to the real music that was being produced before. They don't, so they that's why a lot of them flock to Taylor Swift, because she sounds so much better compared to the other rubbish. and that's why, you know, she's so popular. But the thing is that it's all about self, self, self. It's all, you're trapped in your own little world and you never come out of it. What I wanted to say is that, you know, the people who are complaining about her, they don't understand that if these people, John Root, who never got to the root of the issue, and other people had if they had understood what the truth was telling them to do, then we would not have Taylor Swift dominating the music scene, and in fact, I believe that there's a possibility that if America had been restored, Taylor Swift herself would have been restored. Because why is she continuing to produce this worthless music? Because it's popular. People like it. So she makes more of it. So she thinks that she feels validated by all this support. $1 billion worth of support. Literally. And so she keeps pumping out this music, and she's never challenged to say, hey, this is not good enough. This is okay, but it's not okay. This is not, oh, you have to go beyond okay. And to be challenged to go deeper. And she went there for a short while when that Brazilian fan died in Brazil that we talked about. When I saw her singing a part of a song that she made in dedication to her, and I said, oh wow, that's her. That's what she would be singing like if she were in the green zone. But she's never been challenged to go there. So that's why she keeps pumping out this music. And I know that if America had been restored, she would have been challenged, because her music would not have been as well accepted. And then she would have been confronted. Am I missing something? Am I missing something? And she might have, I don't know, crossed the musical Jordan into a different zone. But she will never do that. But see, John Root doesn't see that. He sees her. She is, and now she's promoting homosexual values and this and that and the other. And kind of making us Christians, attacking us Christians with the video. The video doesn't even mention, I don't think, Christians. Literally. And he's attacking the Christian view of marriage. So again, from that traditional perspective, everything is tradition, tradition, tradition. Now, it's not a question of right or wrong. It doesn't matter if it's been a tradition or not a tradition. Who gives a rot and derriere whether it's been a tradition or not a tradition? Something is true because it's true, or it's false because it's false, no matter when or how long it's been supported. But no one can go into that zone and say, okay, why, none of these Christians can go and say, okay, why is homosexuality wrong? No, none of them can go to the root of the issue and say, what moves homosexuality? What triggers it? What causes people to enter into that behavior? No one knows the roots of homosexuality. Speaking of roots, they don't go there. They don't understand it. No one can come and start speaking these things out to expose the roots of homosexuality, why they happen. We've tried to do that, maybe not as well as we could on the website where these recordings are posted, where we try to talk about these underlying roots that move homosexuality. But no one talks about, these people don't talk about these things. They just say, that's been our traditional, the traditional view of marriage between man and a woman. That's all there is to it. And we believe this because the Bible tells me so. And you think you're going to change things just by holding on to that? No, it's powerless. It's matriarchal. There's no depth, no forward thrust to it. No transformational change in the message. It's just staying in the past, staying in the past. And then all these naive young idiots listen to that and go, I don't want to be stuck in the past, man. I want to go somewhere, and I want to follow these leaders who are promising that they're going to take us to these new promised lands of Nirvana liberalism. So they leave conservatives behind and follow these cult liberal cult leaders. So they complain about these things, and then I believe Taylor Swift might have been transformed if America had been transformed. It's interesting how we all depend on each other as human beings. We're all at the end of the days. It's kind of ironic. It sounds like I'm contradicting myself right now, but I've always said that in a certain way, we are all the architects of our own destiny. We all decide how we want to live our lives. And it's our decision. We have been granted by the truth with this sovereign authority to decide what we want to do with our lives. Now, whether we do the right thing with it, that's a different story. But we all have the ability to decide how we want to decide our lives. So in a sense, we are the architects. And there's a sense where that phrase is not correct. But I hope you take the side that I'm trying to explain here. That we are, in a sense, the architects of our own destiny. We decide where we want to go. And so it's ironic because this guy who was praising Swift, talking about the religious experience and all that, saying that that she is the architect, the hero of her own story. But she is the architect of a hero of her own story that goes nowhere. But we are the architect. We decide where we want to go, but interestingly, we're also influenced by the decisions of others. So even though we're all responsible for where we go, Taylor Swift will be responsible for her life, and she will be held to account for what she does with her music, and is doing and will do with her music. But in a kind of peculiar way, she could have been affected by others and to be taken to a different destiny. And even though she could have gone there on her own, if she had gotten there with the help of others, she would have been blessed with the rewards of going there as if she had gone there on her own. I don't know how to explain what I'm trying to say, but as we are interrelated, we can, let me put it to you this way. A person could send his own life to hell. And I mean that in a figurative sense, you know, just trash his own life and send it to hell, or send it to a heaven, you know, a great life. And maybe on his own, he would go to hell, but with your influence, he would take it to heaven. And then when he enjoys that life of heaven, it's as if he had gotten there on his own, but it was with your help. So I don't know if I'm making sense. I'm trying to get an idea in my head that I'm not sure how to verbalize. But the thing is that we could have taken Taylor Swift to a heaven, to a life where she would have been transformed into this great artist, transformational artist, the truly transformational artist. But the thing is, she still could have done it on her own, but she chose not to. But we could have enabled her to get there. But we didn't. John Root didn't enable her. No one else enabled her, because the Christian church is so matriarchal and is so void. It's hell. It's a hell. Beneath the thin veneer, there is hell in the matriarchal Christian church. It's a place of emptiness, a dark cave of purposelessness. So it's ironic, this Michael Snyder talking about the thin veneer, but he doesn't realize the church he goes to every Sunday, I'm sure he goes to church, is a place that has a thin veneer over the emptiness that's inside. And that's why these people have to flock to Taylor Swift to, quote, have a religious experience. They go to the stadium, like the Argentinian people who went to River Plate Stadium to have a religious experience with Taylor Swift. But it was the wrong religious experience. And it's all because the people who had to get to the root of things never chose to. We all got collectively stuck, in a sense. And let me just go to another story that I'm not sure if we're going to get to the music, but it says here, U.S. drug shortages hit record high, and lawmakers warned they could mean life or death for millions of patients as girl 9 with leukemia faces 15-month wait for life-saving medication that costs just $10. And this kind of goes to what went on during the lockdown nonsense. That cheap medicine like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin that could have saved thousands and thousands of lives, hundreds of thousands of lives, and could have just put an end to the virus breakout and any all that came with that. All of that was stopped because the pharmaceutical companies knew that they would not be able to profit off of this crisis. If cheap medicine was, if people were given the freedom to take these medicines, so that's why they started taking it away from people. And this story, by the way, was posted on the dailymail.com or dailymail.co.uk as I type it. It was posted on the 7th of December, 2023. So it talks about the shortage of life-saving medications and stuff, and a lot of medicines are also in short supply because the supply chain of dependence from China and so forth. And the pharmaceutical companies keep blaming the supply chain and all that. But at the end of the day, it's that a lot of them have stopped producing these medicines because they're cheap and they're not profitable. So they're simply stopped producing them. That's why they're in short supply because they don't care to produce this because it's cheap, and so they prefer to produce the more expensive, more profitable drugs. So what the reason why I wanted to say all mention this story is somebody in Congress is reading this. And before that, the other thing is this kind of highlights how, liberals back in the day, 20, 30 years ago, were always anti-pharmaceutical companies. Like they were the devil, these evil corporations who are willing to kill people for the sake of money. And suddenly that all changed. And now they were these saviors who came with these quote vaccines to save us from the evil SARS-CoV-2 virus. And suddenly all that they kept saying about the pharmaceutical companies disappeared. That's how you live when you live in La La Land. You live in this world of contradictions where you act like a crazy person, irrational, and you contradict yourself with no justification at all. So this just reminded me that, well, what about the evil of the pharmaceutical companies? And now no one complains about this because liberals would jump on a story like this 30 years ago. But they don't jump on it now because if they jump on it, they have to admit that then all these things that we're saying to defend the pharmaceutical companies and to promote the so-called vaccine was all falsehood. They can't go there. They don't want to undermine their own message, so they don't say any of these things. But what I wanted to say is people in Congress are reading this. Why isn't anyone doing something about it or thinking, how do we deal with this issue? Because you can't also say force a company to produce the medicine. You can't do that because that's they are free companies. We'd be infringing on certain other freedoms if we do that. But why don't the Congress people in Congress say, okay, let's expose this. First of all, just make it known and make a big hoopla about it and shame the pharmaceutical companies for doing this. And second, come up with a solution, deal with the root. To be frank, I don't know what the root solution is for this. I don't know what it is. My first initial thought is have the government set up a competing company that produces these cheap medicines. If the pharmaceutical companies don't want to produce it, then have the government produce them temporarily as a in the meantime as. As private companies rise up to fill the void. But that's always been my belief. If government wants to get involved in people's lives, then get involved as competition, cheap competition. When they see that society is being greedy about something. That's always been my focus. But the thing is, Noah's thinking about this. Noah's saying, okay, what is the fundamental root problem here? There's a problem with our system that enables something like this. No one goes to the root of it. So we all complain about it, and no one's doing anything about it. Why isn't this being dealt with somehow by the people in Congress? So that's, again, the black unwillingness to deal with the root issues, the roots of things. So now that we've said these things, so we've been talking basically about two things, the veil being removed and the black unwillingness to deal with root issues. Those were the two things we talked about before we talked about music. And now we're going to slightly begin to talk about music a little more. We mentioned Taylor Swift already once, but let's mention her again. I'll say this very quickly. I want to get to at least one song. It says here on the dailymail.com or dailymail.co.uk, posted on the 3rd of December, 2023, the headline read, Taylor Swift and Brittany Mahomes solidify BFF status. Pop megastar borrows red teddy coat of Patrick Mahomes' wife as she braves frigid temperatures to cheer on boyfriend Travis Kelce in Green Bay. So notice, what drew me to this story is I saw the photo, and the photo shows Taylor Swift in the center, and she's wearing this black, all black, like black trousers, a black top, and on top of that, she's wearing this red coat. So she's red and black, if you catch what I'm saying, and Brittany Mahomes, who is the wife of the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, the team that her boyfriend plays in, she's also wearing red and black. And I think those are the colors of the Kansas City Chiefs, red and black. And that kind of made me think, interesting, red and black. See the stages we've talked about, the white stages, the epiphany stage, then you have red, black, and green. So she's wearing red and black. All black, but this red on top. And Brittany Mahomes is kind of a little bit of the opposite. She's wearing red underneath with a black like jacket on top. So red and black, and they're there to watch the Green Bay Packers. You see, red, black, and green. And I think the Green Bay Packers won that game. They beat the Chiefs. So her boyfriend's team lost, if I remember correctly. Or if I read correctly, yes, the Packers won 27-19. So the Green Bay Packers won. So that kind of reminded me, she's stuck in black. That's why she was wearing all black with this red coat on top. Because she represents a music, the stagnation of American music, because we as a nation became stuck in black. And that's why we weren't able to defeat going to green. That's why the red and black team, the Kansas City Chiefs, lost to the Green Bay Packers. And they were playing in Green Bay. Or were they? No, I'm sorry. They went to green. Interesting. They went to Green Bay. So they went to green territory and lost. Because green is always going to be superior to red and black. And so I just found that very interesting. It's not a coincidence that she came in all red, all black, with this red coat on top that she borrowed but she was all black. She started all black and she just wore the red coat because, you know, it was very cold in Green Bay. And it just represents her. It's not a coincidence. It represents her music and the state of the country. And then another headline, kind of similar, on the dailymail.com, published on the 6th of December, 2023, 3 days later. It says, Taylor Swift goes glam in black fur coat and signature red pout for pal Emma Stone's film premiere after revealing the truth about timeline of Travis Kelce romance in Time cover. So there's a picture of her and she's all black. And they say the red pout, so, you know, because she wears this over-the-top red lipstick. But her attire is all black. That emphasizes I'm stuck in black. I'm stuck in black. So it's just curious that, you know, these two stories that came out this week with her dressed in black. That just, is, I know she doesn't realize it, but she did that because she's representing what America is now, and music, American music, stuck in black. When you're stuck in black, you're like the Israelites wandering in the wilderness, you know, wandering and never entering the promised land to conquer it. And in the Bible, it says that the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness for 38 years, and then they died off. And then only a new generation went in, crossed the Jordan, and entered and fought, you know, all the people in Canaan and conquered a lot of the promised land, a lot of the land that they now have as a nation. That all these people claim was someone else's, but they've won that land like 2,000 years or 3,000 years ago, and they established an Israelite kingdom for all that time, so they have much more claim to that land than the Jordanians, aka Palestinians. But that's another story. But the thing is that what drew my attention, aside from the attire, the black attire, and I'm scrolling down, and just tons of photos of her all wearing black, even black shoes. The only thing not black in her is her face, obviously white, and her lipstick red. So you have white, red, and black, but no green. And interestingly, just as I was saying that, there's a photo of her, and there's some green thing in the background, but it's not her. It's somebody's vest, like these fluorescent vests that people wear when these, you know, like crossing guards and whatever. Someone in the back that I can't see has this kind of reddish vest glowing in the background. It's dark at night, but it's not on her. I don't know. It's not a coincidence, in my opinion. So I keep scrolling and just wearing black and wearing black and wearing black. But what I wanted to get to is, this is a long story. I apologize. I'm going down and down, trying to get to where. Okay, here it is. But the star, you know, the Taylor Swift, but the star told the magazine, Time Magazine, I think, she believes her rise to the top came after she was almost canceled after Kim Kardashian shared a video that appeared to show her approving Kanye West's song where he claims, quote, "I made that be, you know what, famous." Let's say it. "I made that bitch famous." Despite Swift's insistence that she had not. Quote, "Make no mistake, my career was taken away from me," unquote, Swift said of the backlash that followed, which saw many call her a, quote, snake, imagery she would then use for her comeback album, Reputation. Swift continued, quote, "You have a fully manufactured frame job in an illegally recorded phone call, which Kim Kardashian edited and then put out to say to everyone that I was a liar. Quote, "That took me down psychologically to a place I've never been before. I moved to a foreign country, didn't leave a rental house for a year. I was afraid to get on phone calls. I pushed away most people in my life because I didn't trust anyone anymore. I went down really, really hard," unquote. However, Swift told the magazine she had since then taken a different approach to her life in the public eye. She added, quote, "Yes, if I go out to dinner, there's going to be a whole chaotic situation outside the restaurant, but I still want to go to dinner with my friends. Life is short, have adventures. Me locking myself away in my house for a lot of years, I'll never get that time back. I'm more trusting now than I was 6 years ago, unquote. But the thing is, it's mentioned somewhere in this very long article that the place she went to is England. So she went to England to hide. I think you all know, may know the story when she, this was years ago, I wasn't even paying attention, but I kind of heard by accident about this incident where there was this Grammy award or this award show. She was receiving an award and Kanye West went up to the stage and interrupted her acceptance speech and tried to take the award away from her and say that she was getting it because she was white and it was racially motivated or whatever. This crazy thing that Kanye West did that humiliated her. And then I didn't know about this phone call. I had no idea because I don't follow these people. But apparently Kim Kardashian was married to Kanye West at the time, recorded her on a phone call, and they edited the phone call to make it sound like she was agreeing with how, as if she was coordinating with Kanye West for publicity purposes or something like that. But apparently, you know, this call that Kim Kardashian put out was edited, you know, to make it look, make it sound like she, like Taylor Swift was saying something she wasn't saying. So she had this moment where she was close to dying. Let me put it this way. It was like she was being challenged to cross the Rubicon, or in this case, cross the Jordan. She could not stay in America. She had to go to England. And there's something significant about that. She couldn't do it here. She had to go to England because England is greener than America. And I mean that in a figurative sense, not literally. Well, maybe technically it might also be literally greener, more grass and more meadows and things like that. But who knows? The thing is that she had to go there. But she didn't come out of it with an awareness that she had to go green, that she had to enter into the green zone. She came back to America and just changed a little bit about herself. It just became more determined to live in her own world, instead of understanding that there was a world to live for or to die for, if you know what I'm trying to say. So I found that very interesting. But the fact that she had to go to England, she could not do it here, I find that very, very interesting. But she had that moment where she could have been broken. And I've heard this story by so many people that it's as if they're challenged to break from these things that they are stuck in. And they have this dramatic experience in their lives, and instead of them being propelled into where they should go, they just double down. They recover from the knockout. They get knocked down, they recover, get off the mat, and instead of saying, okay, now we have to go to a new dimension, instead of doing that, they just double down. And say, okay, we just need to make some corrections here, and then we'll be fine. And that's what she thought. Maybe all she needed was to make some corrections. But that's not what she needed. She needed a transformation, and she didn't understand that. And she got stuck in black. We're going to skip those. I was going to mention two more things, but I don't think they're worth it at this point right now. So we're just going to go to another quick story. And this is from thegatewaypundit.com. It says, Argentina's Javier Milei prepares a shock package of legislation for his very first day. It's a new social contract, unquote, quote unquote. and it's posted on December the 4th, 2023 by Paul Saran. And Paul Saran is, when I see some of his stories, I kind of get disappointed because he's kind of very stuck in black, very confused. Confused in the sense of not understanding reality. You know, living in this conservative world and a little bit self-deceived. But he sometimes shows signs of life, but I know he's dead on the inside. He doesn't realize it, but let me read what he wrote about Malay very, very quickly. While Chainsaw Malay has somewhat softened his rhetoric and changed a few names on his team, apparently he intends to enact meaningful reforms and repeal a voluminous body of legislation in his very first act after the inauguration on December 10th. So he's going to be inaugurated the day after this recording. Interesting, I didn't know that. So it says, Javier Milei plans to present an extraordinary session of Congress, a highly ambitious omnibus law project to start off his government. Besides the traditional, quote, ministry law that establishes the organizational chart of each new administration, he's preparing a shock package, deregulation of economic law, simplification of the tax system, labor modifications, and the privatization of state companies. And then it says his shock package entails a considerable shrinking of the state structure, reducing the current 18 ministries to 8 or 9 portfolios. But it's a new social contract, as he describes. So what I wanted to mention about this is, you know, this guy, I don't know how he's going to fare, what's going to happen. I still don't understand, because to me, I'm still saying Argentina is dead. So it's confusing to me what's going on with him. But what I'm trying to say is this guy is at least saying we have to break with everything and do shocking things and start new. We have to go green. And interestingly, the image that they have in that article has him, you know, waving. But in the background, they have this green arrow behind him and green numbers like from the stock market. But they're all green. All the colors are green. There's a little bit of yellow and a little bit of red, but it's mostly green, and this green arrow, growth arrow behind him. So this is greenness. See, these are signs of greenness. Someone who is saying, I'm crossing the Jordan in a certain way, or we're going to break with things and go fractal, go thinking things that, you know, that just to challenge the core of everything people have believed in, so that we can do it right this time in a fundamentally transformative way. And so these conservatives praise what he's doing and say, oh, awesome. But they never go, okay, why aren't we doing that here in America? And you know why they don't ever go there? Because they go, well, we already have had the perfect system here. It just got messed up by the Democrats. We just have to go back to the perfect system. And they see it as acceptable that Milei would do that in Argentina, because Argentina is a third world country, so it's all messed up. It didn't have our wonderful system, so he needs to start from scratch. I can understand that, of course. But they don't realize that America needed the exact same thing. But they would never want to go there, because it would have meant taking those idols that they kneel before every night and pounding them against the ground and trashing them and destroying them. And they never wanted to do that with their idols, because their idols they've cost too much money, too much of their soul's money, too much of their emotional investment is in that little statue, that little idol. Called Jefferson and Washington and Madison and the Constitution and the Second Amendment and all this other stuff that they worship. And they just couldn't do that. But Malay has nothing to lose, so he goes, let's just change the whole thing. And instead of taking from that, instead of embracing the greenness and adopting it, conservatives know we don't need that here. We just need to get Trump elected, and then we'll be fine. So, again, it's the contrast. I just wanted to share that as the contrast. But who knows what's going to happen in Argentina, but just to see that just glimmer of greenness is kind of like, it's refreshing in a sense. But who knows how long it will last. But okay. I was going to say these other two stories, but for some reason I feel led to bypass them. I'm just going to go to the last headline before we get to a song, if we still can get to one. And it's okay. This is where I had read this. Not in the other story. Okay, now I see. There was recently, I felt this voice inside of me saying, "Go to the sun," and not to the sun in the sky. Go to the Sun newspaper website. The Sun, is a newspaper in the UK. So I felt the need to go to the Sun. .co.uk. That's the name of the website. thesun.co.uk. So I went there and I found this story. And that's what I knew. Oh, that's why I had to come to this website. And it said, the headline reads, "Swift Start. Taylor Swift reveals real reason she fell for boyfriend Travis Kelce and how a move to UK helped save her career. The pop star also revealed her next album to be re-recorded," blah, blah, blah. And it was posted on the 6th of December, 2023. So so she's talking about her boyfriend and blah, 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 and all that. But, and that she had already started kind of dating him or whatever, before it became public news. But I know that it became the time when it became public, which was in September, was fitting because that was around the time when America was about to die. That's when she suddenly burst on stage, on the stage of world news. If you remember, if you notice, it was around September when she burst on the scene. And that's the month that America died. Because she then became the embodiment of the death of America, of what a dead American culture represents, and her music represents that. It sounds like it's alive, the music, but it's dead on the inside. It takes you nowhere. That's why it's the day the music died, or the day the music went nowhere. That's why we call it that. So she's talking about the Kim Kardashian thing all over again. It says here, she admitted, "It's not lost on me that the two great catalysts for this happening were two horrendous things that happened to me. The first was getting canceled within an inch of my life and sanity. The second was having my life's work taken away from me by someone who hates me." And the second thing she's talking about is that they took her music away from her, literally. Let me see if I can find it here. Let me see. Sorry about this. Yeah, it was right here. It says, "However, the superstar, now one of the world's best-selling artists, is convinced the traumatic incident, along with the controversial sale of her musical back catalog to mogul Scooter Braun, is what has led to her incredible current success." So she had these two incidents, the Kim Kardashian situation with Kanye West, and then this sale of her musical back catalog to a mogul called Scooter Braun, whoever he is. So she lost control of her music, and that's, I think that's part of why she's redoing a lot of her old music to kind of sidetrack that that sale of her music that was done before. So she lost control of her music. And so she lost these two things. And it's as if the truth was taking her music away from her to say, okay, you have to produce something new now. And instead of doing that, she's rehashing the old music and the same style. So she had these two opportunities, these two crises that were placed before her that she had to go through to cross the Jordan. And she didn't do it. It was a missed opportunity. And I'm pretty sure that if America had been on the right path to revival and restoration, that she would have been rescued at that moment. That was a missed opportunity that we as a nation had, and especially conservative Christians, the ones who are poo-pooing her for that video promoting homosexuality and all that stuff, and saying, oh, that's anti-Christian. These same people who say we should pity her and love her, hypocrites. Because if they had done what was right, if they really loved her, they would have loved the truth first. See, that's what you have to do. You have to love the truth first. Then you can love everybody else. That's the first commandment. You have to love the truth. And then the second commandment is love everybody, love others, you know, like yourself. So if these people had loved the truth first, they would have loved the truth, and then they would have created something and shown her the light, like the green light, like that light that I was seeing in that photo that was behind her. And she would have been able to turn around and see the green light and say, hey, that's where I have to go. And her music would have been transformed. Her whole life would have been transformed. And then instead of being the emblem of America's death, of dead American music, she would have been the symbol of a new green movement in music, in American music. And she would have been part of this great transformation. We missed collectively as a country the opportunity to save her. And the same Christians who could have saved her if they had been willing, because there were some of us who were ready to go. We were ready to go. It was just the other people who just did not want to follow. You know, just like in the Bible, it talks about Joshua and this other guy, Caleb, I think his name was. Yes, Joshua and Caleb. And they wanted to go fight all the giants and all the people in across the Jordan. And everybody said, no, I can't go for that. No can do. And they decided to just wander around in the wilderness, according to the Bible. And they wandered and wandered, and they died off. They went in circles. They went into the Taylor Swift labyrinth, and never got out of there. But there were people who wanted to go. I wanted to go. There were others who wanted to go, but everybody else said no. Okay, so we collectively lost the opportunity to save her. So if these hypocrites say that they really loved her, they would have loved the truth first, and then they could have loved her enough to save her. But they chose not to. Now maybe, I don't know, might have time for one song or two, but so we want to get back to, we had mentioned or played the song Songbird by Fleetwood Mac last time, and we talked a little bit about it, and we talked about the fact that there was an Eva Cassidy version of it, and we want to talk about Eva Cassidy a little bit. Eva Cassidy was a singer, and if you go to the website where these recordings are posted, you will see let me see if I can find it here. I should have done this earlier, but there are some postings from August through October of 2008, like 15 years ago. And they're called Fields of Gold. There's part one, part two, part three, and part four. We talk about a lot about Eva Cassidy in parts one and two, a little bit of in parts three and four, but it's mostly in parts one and two, where we talk about the relevance of her life. She was an American singer. Let me just quickly look it up. Eva Cassidy on Wikipedia, just to get the, when she was born and so forth. She was born on February 2nd, 1963, but she passed away on November 2nd, sadly, of 1996. So she lived to the age of 33, and she died of cancer. And it's always sad when I think about her. It just brings so much sadness to know that she died. She died of cancer at the age of 33. And it is significant that this rise of Taylor Swift to her position of preeminence right now, and becoming the person of the year and all that, is when she is 33. Taylor Swift is 33 right now, and this Eva Cassidy died when she was 33. Eva Cassidy, she could have become an Eva Cassidy or something close to, maybe not even close, but at least gotten close to her, and been a Green singer. See, Eva Cassidy was a Green singer. And we talk about her greenness in these articles that we just mentioned, Fields of Gold. There was something very special about her. She didn't become this big, you know, giant musical success in terms of records sold and things like that. And she died too young too, you know. But ironically, after her passing, that's when she became more and more well known. People who go into the Green stage, they know they have to go to die. Yeah, and so generally it's figurative, but sometimes it is literal. And in her case, it was literal. So she died, in her greenness. And so we want to kind of play some songs from her. So let me just go back here. And all right. Before playing a song from her, I'm going to kind of take a risk here. I hope I don't get in trouble for doing this, but I wanted to play you a full video of someone talking about Eva Cassidy, because I don't think I can verbalize it as well and as succinctly as he does in this video. And my concern is that I'm not going to play like 30 seconds, but since this is not technically a song, I don't know if there's some sort of copyright issue, and it's publicly available. You can go find this video that I'm about to play to you in its entirety. So I'm going to stop talking for 4 minutes and 34 seconds. And I wanted to let Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac talk about Eva Cassidy. And if you want to see or hear this video yourself, it's on YouTube. And the title of it is Mick Fleetwood, Mick, you know, M-I-C-K, Fleetwood, talking about Eva Cassidy. So if you do that search, I'm pretty sure it's going to be the first result you're going to find. I'm just going to go silent for a second and let Mick Fleetwood talk about Eva Cassidy.
So I set about meeting, hearing local musicians, and she was one of them. I'm always driven by passion, and that's about it. I don't have a judgment call on technique or anything. Am I moved? Is this sweet? Is this got drama to it? It was like when Stevie and Lindsey joined Fleetwood Mac, he's like, that's it. Let's go. And that's how I first met with that feeling about Eva. Her voice was her ultimate tool of magic and the whole thing. But she was like a perfect band member, really. reminded me of playing emotionally with Peter Green. And I remember talking with her, and I was aware of this person was just as pure as snow, crystals, just totally, and sort of stubborn, really. She was trying to get a record deal, trying to be, you know, noticed, but just almost thinking, well, it's sort of what I'm supposed to do, right? And she was looking for someone who understood her, except there was no one out there that really understood her. I basically said, well, why don't you go and play the game? So off she went to a big sort of get-together in New York with some record company. They loved her music, apparently, and they saw her potential, but it was their potential. It wasn't her vision. So she came back from one of these trips, and I remember saying, well, how did it go? And she said, well, nothing happened. I basically all but walked out and said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not interested. They wanted to take her, the essence of Eva, make it more accessible. But to her, it was like, but what about me? What about it? The essence of me. And I never brought that up again, because I realized it was off limits. The very thing that they wanted to change became the uniqueness of her forever success and regard from all corners of the earth. Her persona was all about her music. She was a gorgeous, plain Jane, but gorgeous girl that had no interest in fluffing up anything. She just wanted to sing. You don't have to be brilliant. But she was brilliant, and she had that childlike, lovely thing, which was just the magic. And I call it it. So I look at her as an interpreter of songs, was someone that has so much power and conviction about herself that she could do that. I mean, some of the songs she would sing were so public domain where you go like, why would you want to do that song? It's like been done by everyone. Well, because it's a great song and I can sing it. She was fearless. She wouldn't play the game and say, well, I'm going to do this, that, and the other just to satisfy that. If I didn't feel right, if it didn't feel right, she's out of there. In terms of Eva and the way she's perceived now and received and loved and through her music, I'm certainly not surprised, but I know when those moments were really, really real that I went, something is happening.
I hope you were able to hear that. Maybe at the beginning, you might not have been able to hear as well. I tried to restart it with a little more volume, but I hope you got to hear it. And if not, you can go to YouTube and hear the interview and watch it. With Mick Fleetwood. But I hope you noticed, for example, what he said, that she reminded him of Peter Green, former member of Fleetwood Mac. So interesting, Green. So interesting that, and I know that's not a coincidence, because she was all green. And I hope you heard when he talked about her not wanting to compromise her music. She came to New York and they liked her, but they wanted to kind of like mold her to what they wanted to make, like a more commercially viable product. And she said no. And that's one thing about green people. They're very uncompromising. It's like, no, I'm like, hell no, we're not going to compromise about this. And that's what makes them radicals. And that's why we were talking in the past about how Trump kind of shies away from radicalism. And when he talks about abortion, he says those radical abortionists who are so radical about their abortionism or their abortion support, but we're not radical like that. In fact, we're kind of moderate because I don't want to be radical about abortion in case, for example, of rape or incest. Then it's okay to abort the fetus. Why, you know, there's to this day, no one has given me a valid justification for that. If it's wrong to kill a fetus, why is it wrong if you know where how the fetus came to be? You know, it's like, and I've shared the example of the baby left at someone's doorstep. It's unwanted. No one, you didn't ask for it, but you're stuck with it. You're not just going to throw it away. You're going to at least care for it for a short while and maybe hand it over to someone who will take care of it permanently. And you can do that with a fetus that even if it's born out of a very tragic or evil situation, like a rape or something like that, which I know that would be just like a horrible thing to go through. I can only imagine. But it's still, you can't just say, oh, let's kill it because I don't like it. I don't know how, you know, where it came from. Or how do you know that the fetus deserves to die? That the fetus somehow is the evil, continues the evil of the father and is evil itself. How do you know that? In that case, if you believe in God and you want to, you think this is, you know, the baby, then you should pray to your God that he kills it, that you get a miscarriage or something. But how can you just by yourself say no? I'm just going to kill it. Well, the thing, my point is that Trump always shies away from radicalism. He never went green. He talks green sometimes. He sounds green. But when he had the chance to do green, not just do the green talk, he always backed away. He always backed away. That's why his time in office was a failure at the end of the day. That's why he didn't really change anything. That's why he was so soundly defeated by the system, because he never went green. Because he always compromised. He started doing the art of the deal and listening to Ivanka and Jared. And that's why he's a failure, because he represents America politically stuck in black. But this Eva Cassidy was not like that. She was uncompromising and she was fully green. And you feel that in the quality of her music. I know this recording has run very long, so at least let's play one song. I know we're way over the time, but excuse me. Let's play the song if I can find it quickly here. Oh my goodness. Here it is. I am going to play most of it. Again, I hope I don't get in trouble. I'm going to play the YouTube video. If you can want to hear it, it's called, if you do a search on How Can I Keep From Singing Eva Cassidy. So that's the song is How Can I Keep From Singing. It's an old Christian hymn. And she sings it. It was popularized by Pete Seeger. So I'm going to let her sing, and then I'm going to very quickly read the lyrics, and I guess that's where we'll have to stop. So here it goes. I hope you can hear it.
Shut up.
I hope you were able to hear that. Yeah, my soul gets stirred when I hear songs like that. I'm going to read to you the lyrics very quickly. I'm reading from genius.com. The song was, it was written originally by some, I think, Baptist preachers in the late 1800s, but it's been recorded by many people, I figure. But one person who made it very popular was Pete Seeger, a folk singer who was born in New York and died in New York. So I'm going to read it very quickly here. The lyrics. So she sang mostly his version of the song. So it says, "My life flows on in endless song above earth's lamentation. I hear the real though far off hymn that hails the new creation. Above the tumult and the strife, I hear the music ringing. It sounds an echo in my soul. How can I keep from singing?" So again, this is music that takes you from outside of yourself. It's not about yourself and yourself, like the Taylor Swift songs and American music that is stuck in black. It is, you know, someone whose life is flowing on in an endless song above earth's lamentation. So it's aware of the emptiness in the world. It's aware of the lamentation of the earth. There's something wrong with the system, with the matriarchal system, with things that are happening right now. But even so, this person is hearing, it says, the real though far off him. So it's far off, but that's the person can hear it. It says, and the hymn that hails the new creation, there's something new, there's something within reach. We just reach for it, we can grasp it, and we can transform and end this lamentation. So it says, above the tumult and the strife, I hear the music ringing. It sounds an echo in my soul. How can I keep from singing? It says, what though the tempest loudly roars, I hear the truth. It liveth. I hear the truth. What though the darkness round me close, songs in the night it giveth. No storm can shake my inmost calm while to that rock I'm clinging. Since love is Lord of heaven and earth, how can I keep from singing? And it says, when tyrants tremble, sick with fear, and hear the death knell ringing, when friends rejoice both far and near, how can I keep from singing? And then I don't think she sang this part, but in Pete Seeger's version, it says, when tyrants tremble, sick with fear, and hear the death knell ringing, when friends rejoice both far and near, how can I keep from singing? In prison cells and dungeon vile, our thoughts to them are winging. When friends by shame are undefiled, how can I keep from singing? See, it says, our thoughts to them are winging. When friends by shame are undefiled. What does that mean? When you know the people around you are not allowing themselves to be defiled by the shame that the system is trying to impose on them, to force them to comply. And you know, when this person realizes that those around them are also uncompromisingly green, that's when the soul cannot keep from singing. So there's a powerful quality to this song. And it takes you, like when it says, you know, the song says, my life flows. I think she says, my life goes on. I'm not sure if I heard correctly, but technically the lyrics say, my life flows on in endless song. So you're taken on this river. You're taken on a journey. You get on that song and it's like going down these rapids, and you start just going down, and it gets faster and faster and faster. And that's how you're taken to a place. And then you end the journey different than how you started. You're in a different place. You're in a different dimension. That's how green music sounds, as opposed to the black music that just talks about yourself, and then you end the journey, just like Taylor Swift did when she had the two crises. And she ended up maybe a little improved with a couple of band-aids on her, but she stayed the same, and she did not grow. And we had wanted to say a lot more about Eva Cassidy and play a couple of more songs from her, but this audio recording has gone way, way too long, so we're going to stop it there and continue next time, hopefully. And so thank you very much for listening.